Hi, everybody. Welcome or welcome back to Care Life Podcast. It's a new week, meaning a new episode with me, Phyllis McKenzie. I hope you're having a fantastic, fantastic new month. By the time this is out, I'm sure it's already May and April. April is kind of weird, but I hope we get a redo in May. And before we begin, as always, please remember to follow all our social media pages. Links in the description, and also follow the podcast depending on what app you're listening us from. And from those using Spotify and Apple Podcasts, leave a rating, leave a review. It helps out the podcast because you guys know we don't have an algorithm and all that. So your ratings and reviews are all we get. And today we have a wonderful guest, you guys. We have an author. Yes, we're back to interviewing authors. And today's author is something you do not expect, because the book titles may sound familiar, but it's actually not what it is. So before we get to know about his books, let's get to know our guest first. Adrian, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's lovely having you here. And I know that the title of your books won't be something that we expect, because the first time I saw the title of your books on my email, I thought of something else completely, and then I had to do a deep dive. I had to Google and think, is this, could it, and realize no, those are two things. But before we get to know about the books, I'd like to know about you, Adrian. Please tell us, who is Adrian Zanuga?
All right, well, basically I am, at my heart, I've been in healthcare for the last almost 20 years. And I started off writing back in Texas whenever I was pursuing my college efforts to kind of expand upon what I was going to do for a career. I thought I thought maybe journalism. And I really wanted to pursue creative writing. But this was early 2000s. And I didn't really, I kind of got a little scared with the path because of income and how am I going to support myself? Every day is kind of in question whenever I'm trying to find stories and make my name in media. And this was before the social media, you know, arena came to life, but I never stopped, even though I pursued initially writing, creative writing and journalism. I had put it on the back burner to go into healthcare, and I started practicing medicine in 2005, 2004 really, with an internship in Baylor down in Texas. But I never stopped writing. It was always my passion. So growing up in Texas, originally spent a lot of my time, you know, outdoors, horses, and the wilderness. Essentially, we had a lot of property, so I was blessed with really being able to expand my imagination through all the adventures I put myself through. And healthcare, you know, jumping forward, it was something that I had a passion for as helping people. But I also had a passion for writing, and I got into creative writing again, actually starting with a little bit of artistry and doing some of the artwork for the books that I had later written. But I got heavy into writing about 2015. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm still doing healthcare and still doing writing. And hopefully one day the passion for writing will take precedence and help me succeed in doing that full time.
Great. And what happened to you so that you can just transition from career to career between healthcare and, as I understand, you are also part of a Marine Corps at some point? So
yes.
What inspired you to take those transitions in life from Marine Corps and healthcare all the way into being an author and writing this book series that you have currently?
Yeah, okay. The going right into the Marine Corps, I saw myself before I had gotten out of the Marines and wanting to do anything with writing or healthcare. I, as a youth, saw myself doing maybe a career in military. Mm-hmm. At the time, I was 17 years old, and you can legally join the service if you have your parents sign and agree, if it's what you know you want to do. And I was so headstrong, just that sprite teenager, 17 and full of motivation to get out there and start that. So I did. I went into the Marines in 1998, and the journey for me started just kind of the world opening up. But shortly after being in the service, I started getting sick, and mm-hmm. I couldn't hold food or water down. I didn't know what was going on. And I was in the infirm, the military hospital, for just over 24 hours, a little more than a day. And, they were bringing me, I had flu-like symptoms, but they mm-hmm. were bringing me juice and just good food. But at the end of that day, after the end of that 24 hours, they checked my blood sugar, and it came back that I was diabetic at that point. So the military doctor, he said, "You've got two choices, son. You can take an honorable medical discharge, or we can get you a office clerical job sitting, you'd serve out the rest of your tour at a desk." Mm-hmm. But that didn't strike me as anything that I had signed up for. So that's when my mind, I was confused. I was scared. I got out of the service because I took the honorable medical discharge. I remember my dad picking me up at the airport, and, he kind of put his hand on my shoulder, and we shook hands. I gave him a hug. And this was so long ago, it felt like a different life. But I worked a couple of jobs, getting out of the service, and it was Texas heat. So anybody that lives down there on the equator, they know it's hot. Mm-hmm. And it was hard to manage my health care, my own health, while being out in some of these jobs. I was working lineman and doing some different hard outdoor work. But to check your blood sugar at that time, you had to poke your skin or your fingers. And, if you're working hard, your hands could be covered in dirt or oil or anything if you're an outdoor job. And I felt kind of lost doing that. I was like, I can do more than this. I have so much upstairs in my mind. I don't know where to start. Well, my sister was a nurse, and she hadn't graduated yet, but she had recommended. She said, "Hey, why don't you go check out Allied Health and see about, potential options? You can get into radiology. You can get into nursing, respiratory, physical therapy." There was a number of options to choose from. Mm-hmm. And I picked up a pamphlet. This was all ongoing while I was taking some junior college courses and leaning towards into the literal arts and wanting to consider writing, just because I like that. But she was telling me, you also need to make sure you have a good income, good source of income. And in a hospital, you can maintain your own, good checks on your own healthcare. Mm-hmm. You're surrounded by people that could help until you get a handle on things. So 25 years ago, that was her inspiration. And I started into respiratory because I believe, that was the thing that I saw. That was kind of the catalyst in my life. My sister was going through nursing. I can do something along those lines. She knew it. She put me onto it. And yeah, I've worked in respiratory therapy in places all over the country. I started off in Fort Worth at Baylor All Saints, Cook's Children's. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of NICU experience and level one trauma, ICU experience, and cardiac experience, all based right there in Texas. It's a fantastic place to start learning. But then I started traveling, doing contract work. So that has become extremely popular over the last number of years, contracted health cares, but that's how I got out of Dallas-Fort Worth, is as a contracted health care. I took a contract at Franklin Square Pediatric ER in Maryland. And it was kind of like going from Dallas-Fort Worth to Dallas-Fort Worth on the East Coast. Baltimore, D.C. is very similar in population, the traffic and all that. And I had done a few contracts in other places, but I talked to my providers, the company I was working with, and I said I wanted to go Northwest. Well, but you get me into the mountains. I've never been there. And that's in 2006, going on 2007. I found myself in Casper, Wyoming. And I was heading towards Bozeman and just going more up into the mountains. And I fell in love with the area. I've been here ever since. I've gone back to Texas to visit family, but I've been here up in the mountains since. And it's been a wonderful life. I had met my wife, two kids now. And they were also a huge fundamental part of me writing. I was already doing short stories, kind of storyboarding with some of my artwork, and I had some ideas, but I had the base of the series in 2015 really come to fruition, and I had it all in my college bound notebooks, essentially written down with paper. I wasn't even using a computer, because sometimes I would just have thoughts and I would need to jot them down. And I'd always keep these notebooks, because when the inspiration is there, it's, you have no time to wait, you know? And I reached out for several months because of the short stories that I had done and submitted over with a company on the East Coast, ZeniMax Media. And I had come into contact in 2015 with the series being considered for use with the trilogy that I had in mind for it. And I had written and written and written. I just wrote my heart out. I think during this time that I'm talking about, there's so many amazing little components that happened. I met musicians in my travels. I had amazing discussions based off of my work and then their interest in some of the work for companies, that the company that I was working with, and musicians that have in their own right grown to be phenomenal, you know, players on the market. They've written songs that are, I mean, over the years, their music has actually made scenes in my stories kind of come to life. It's like I've written scenes with inspiration from their music. Taylor Davis, wonderful violinist. I love her work. I'm a huge supporter. We've had some fantastic discussions about the work going forward. Lindsey Sterling, fantastic violinist. Same thing. Sat and talked with her about the books, and it's crazy how our lives have branched off into different directions. And then artists all over the world. The internet has been, you know, made the possibility of making these handshakes happen. Compared to, I never would have been able to meet any of them. You know, it's amazing.
Yeah, and from what I've heard, you've lived a very adventurous life, if you can say that. And I think I now understand why you wrote the series that you have today, The Elder Scrolls, Zanetta's. And just by the title, to be honest, Adrian, when I heard it, I thought of the game, The Elder Scrolls game. And that's why I went on a deep, deep dive. I tried so hard. I'm like, could these two things be related? Could it possibly be that the video game was inspired by the book, or the book inspired the video? I couldn't tell. And then I realized, oh, wait, those are two different things. They just happen to have the same beginning of the title, The Elder Scrolls. So
so close. But then they were, and that's it. That's what so many people had said. And no, they are right in line with the same world of Tamriel and the Elder Scrolls video game. So ZeniMax is the people. They are my boss. They are my overseers and the individuals that I started writing for. So in 2020, I began having talks with Robert Altman. He's the CEO. He was the co-founder of ZeniMax. Mm-hmm. And the most inspirational part of these books that were written for a company that had been known for games, they had done some books, and their books tell stories. They're fantastic. But when I started having the discussions with Robert, we found ourselves on this same understanding that we wanted these to have a cathartic grasp on the audience. We didn't want it to read like you're playing a game. We didn't want it to read like you're stuck in one character of the game itself, where people are familiar, and that sense made kind of the response that I have had from individuals and the reviews and people reaching out on just social media, asking questions, and, you know, just they're excited because they either have been to these places, so to speak, of these that are in these games, or they are just familiar with the title itself of The Elder Scrolls and want to know what this is. Is it a download content? What are you guys doing? What is this? What is the expectation? And that was it. We wanted to make something that people could listen to that were either fans of the game series that had been out there since the 80s, and they continued to make new ones. The last one was Skyrim. Mm-hmm. These books are, they give the fan base a little bit more information that was always, you know, bounced around with the lore writers. The individuals that write the lore, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's not released because it's either time consuming or it doesn't fit the narrative that we're trying to really, you know, steer with the story that's at hand. So this was also, it read to where people who never had played any of the games and weren't gamers to begin with, they don't have to be. They can get into this series, listen to the intro, and kind of get a basic fundamental understanding of what the world is. There's many races, there's many things that are similar to our natural world, but also, you know, exciting. Like Harry Potter would have something along the lines of magic. Lord of the Rings has different races that speak the language of everyone else or their own specific dialect and language. It's that realm. And that's what I've told a lot of individuals that have asked. They're like, wait, what is it about? You know, what's it like? And I said, well, are you familiar with the Elder Scrolls? And they'll say, no, I'm not. What is it? I said, well, it's mostly familiar with the game community. Mm-hmm. And they say, well, what genre does it fall under? And I said, well, it's magic, high fantasy. You would consider like Lord of the Rings. I said, but I said, maybe if Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings got and had a creation, it's right there in the middle. It's just that perfect blend of a world that you love to visit. But these characters that I was really putting out there for individuals to listen to, that was the most important thing, is that, yes, this is the Elder Scrolls. And Robert Altman's vision was to bring realism, something that the readers who either if they had played the games, they can follow along and be like, well, you know, wow, I know where she's at. And I'm talking about Janetta. Janetta is the main character. And we follow her instead of bouncing all over, following multiple different individuals. So we try to stay streamlined and let the audience feel what she's feeling, see what she's seeing, experience the horrific events and, you know, places that she's visiting in real time, kind of with her. And that was, you know, the whole plan to begin with is just like, let's immerse the audience in these stories. So then, and they'd be excited to either they just get back on there and play their games again and try and make sense of this stuff. And one individual had messaged me on Facebook Messenger and was asking a couple little questions. And they were asking on location, because on book three, there's this very specific location where Janetta's looking out over this wooded forest that's dipped down below in this valley. She's looking towards this house. And I can almost sense his excitement in his text, because he's like, I found it. I found it. I found the cliff where she was at looking over this. And I was like, perfect. Perfect. It's exactly what we're trying to kind of combine with people who have played the games and people who haven't and never will play the games, but they still have that same sense of being there journeying with her. And it's a great fun adventure to listen to.
So I was right. It's a game to book situation here.
Yes.
Yeah, because yes. I saw it and I swear I searched everywhere. I'm just trying to find a clue, because nobody talked about it. I'm like, why did I not hear about it in the first place? I know I never played the game, but I know of the game. So how did I not know that the books are there? So my brain was just constantly telling me that there's no way, Kenzie, there's no possible way that it's a video to book situation, because how many times does that happen? We normally see a game to movie situation or a movie to game situation, but game to movie, it's a rare gem, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, the books they're like these diamonds in the rough, and I'm not trying to praise my own work. I hate that. I'm not egotistical. I just, what I'm saying is I enjoy listening to the books like I'm sitting down and watching a movie. It's fantastic. Book one started off a little slow just for the introduction of the world itself. And we did that on purpose, because we wanted the audience to, we know the individuals who have played the games are probably going to be bored to death at this point, but it's only about 20 minutes or so, not even. And it's for the non-gamers. It was for the readers that wanted to pursue the titles so that they're familiar with the world. And then the story just takes off and it goes straight into the narrative, you know? Yeah. And that's, I think, the biggest problem that we had, and it's still kind of ongoing, is I'm still in talks with ZeniMax, and I'm back and forth with their legal team and their producers over there, just individuals that I've talked with for years now. The problem that happened was in 2020, when everything was ramping up and these titles were coming to, well, being complete. Book two was finished roughly September, I believe, maybe October. I think it was September. And I had been talking with Mr. Altman about the plans and getting everything pushed forward. And he was ecstatic. He was really just dug in to what was released so far. And when I talked to him in October, he said he had read book one and two. So I said, perfect. I'm working very hard on getting three released. It shouldn't take me much longer. And at that point, I was meaning a couple of months. But I also had brought up the idea. I said, you know, I'm also going to look at getting in contact with a couple of studios to do some audiobooks, because I know how these scenes are supposed to sound. I know how the emotion is supposed to be rolling off the tongues of these characters. And I can commit that completely. So I would like to get into that. I'd like to get that ball rolling. So he was saying, yeah, absolutely. You know, whenever book three is finished, we'll talk about finalizing everything, getting it complete and putting out official. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is where everything had taken the hard turn for me and the company that I was starting up, because that's one thing I didn't mention in, you know, the start of the show was I was working on my own audio recording company to where we do sound effects and audio overlay. And the reason that was important is because of what had happened next. In February of 2021, Mr. Altman had passed away. So my book three was complete and ready to go in January of that year. So I don't think he ever got the chance to listen to book three. And that's kind of heartbreaking, because it is the best. It is the culmination of everything. Everything came together from the first two stories that he said he was eager to hear more of. He never got to hear part three. And that kind of crushed me, just because we were going full steam ahead. So since then, everything that affected everybody, COVID, it shut the world down in certain areas. Some places kept on managing as was, with little to no disturbance. Other places you couldn't go into a store, you know, to buy groceries. It was just, you remember that disaster period of economic shutdown. Well, it also shut down the recording studios and everything else, but I was so focused on continuing through with finishing the audiobooks that talking with Silo Studios, there's a couple other studios, some of them out of Denver, and the individuals that were in the sound realm just pointed me on how to set up sound booth and get things set up on my own with a facility to accommodate. So I did. I set my own up. I started my own audio and sound effects company. It's called Brass God Productions. And I did all of the overlay and voiceover acting and everything else in-house. I did a couple of outsource individuals that helped, but the books went through as normal. The only thing that didn't hit was now what I'm working with for ZeniMax is getting them pushed forward into the public eye, because they're hard to find. They don't have the same PR and the same release. And since book three wasn't done, we're still in talks on the lowest part of the conversation, which is getting paid. I mean, everybody does work to get paid, but still in talks with that, with ZeniMax, Bethesda. So eventually things will be finalized and the books will be finished uploading into their library. And that'll be a great day for me.
But until then, I think people can just catch it on Audible, because I have them on my lineup now, because this year I started reading fantasy books again, and any adventure-themed fantasy books, and I am obsessed, Adrian. And when I saw this, I had to add them on my wish list. I think by next week I'll have begun reading them once I finish my other TBR list. Yeah, so I think you guys got to check the book. We don't need to wait. We don't need to wait for them to have it officially on their website or something. You can just go on, check it on Audible, leave a rating, tell Adrian what you think about the book, right?
Absolutely. Please do. Yeah. Leave reviews and comment. Get on Facebook. If you if you're on Facebook and search the title of, you know, Genetis Chronicles, it'll just pop up right there. So anybody that's listening to the audiobooks can actually look over the art or some of the art. I would say about 90% of it, because some of it gives away a little bit of the storyline. But there's so much of the art that we have uploaded on the Facebook page that goes along with people that have the audiobooks. They can see some of these scenes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm about to ask you, I think it's something that people in the gamer community will have for you. Is there any lore that has stuck with past Elder Scrolls game that are present in the series, or is there a new lore that has popped up with this series?
It is the lore that has been in existence, and we didn't release anything that gave any innuendos or any hints toward the new release coming, Elder Scrolls 6, nothing along those lines that's finite. So yes, the lore that's in the past, it coincides right with what is in these books. So people that have experienced some of the lore, they'll know exactly what's happening and then kind of what's to come, especially in book 3, because book 3, there was a couple of individuals that were asking questions about, well, I won't give it away, but when you listen to it, it flows very well. And that's one thing I also invite a lot of individuals. They might think they have some answers to something or questions. Please reach out and message me on Facebook Messenger or also on the website that is out there. BrassGodProductions.org actually has the titles listed and a little bit of backstory. So everybody more than welcome. Send me a link, send me a message. I'd love to talk with the listeners. That's what this was all about, is trying to be amongst the community as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. And in regards to the book itself, can somebody read the books individually without reading the next or the previous one? Because you find some books in other series when it comes to fantasy. When it's a series book, let's say book 1, 2, 3, and 4, you can't read book 3 without having read book 1 and 2 because the story won't make sense. So in this situation, for this series in particular, can each book exist as a singular entity, or does the story have to flow that they have to read book 1, 2, 3 in order to understand the story?
Yeah, perfect question. They do benefit from starting with book 1. I just say you need to start with part 1, part 2, and then part 3, doing it in sequence, because that was the other thing you had mentioned a little while ago, talking about you've heard a lot of games to movies. And when I had the discussion about making these books, and I shortened them, I edited a lot from them to make them fit into a specific bracket. And when I talked to Robert about this years ago, we had done a lot of editing with book 1 specifically. When it was changed over into an audiobook, I didn't know how it was going to work at the time, and I changed a couple of things while I was working. But each of these books come out to about just over 3 hours. That's like a Lord of the Rings movie. So an audible book that translates into a movie, essentially, flawless, 3 hours, 3.5 hours at the longest. I think book 2 came out to about 3.5 hours, around that time frame. And that was the goal. We could have made these books drag out a lot longer, but it would have crushed the pace. And we wanted the pace to feel like you're stressing with this character, not causing the audience stress, but you can feel her dilemma. And it was all because of how we kept that consistent time window. So yeah, getting back into the answer of that specifically, if you watched a Lord of the Rings movie, If you watch, if you started off with the two towers, then you wouldn't, you would have missed part one and everything that led up to it. And the same thing goes, if you start off in three, you can kind of enjoy and appreciate maybe where the setting is, you know, beginning at that book's point, but you don't, yeah, you're not set up for what had happened before or after. Book three is definitely my favorite. You know, I ran it in reverse. Sometimes when you go and watch a movie, part one is the blockbuster, and then they try and make part two and three or whatever else after the fact because of part one's popularity.
Mm-hmm.
But part one is the introduction to the world and the scenario. So it's a little slower starting, and then it's just drawing you in, and it's fantastic because it's more of the character building and you know who she is.
Mm-hmm.
I love it for what that is. It's because it's like, it's the humble basic beginning. Book two, you're fully committed. You're on this adventure with her, and you're going to places like the gamers had stated, they've been there. Oh my gosh, I know these places, et cetera, et cetera. And some of the other characters that she interacts with. And it's still ramping up, and it's just snowballing, really, really building momentum. And then book three, the lid blows off. And everything that she's after, every place that you've been in the games, and the whole culmination of all the events that have happened up to that point, part three is the, the
it's
best.
It's the icing on the cake, basically.
It is, yeah. It's I can't say anything about it. I just, aside from saying too much.
Yeah, it's great hearing an author having a favorite book in what they've written. Like, in a bunch of them, they can pick out one which was their favorite, especially in a story series, because it's like telling an author to pick their favorite child, you know? Because
you love them,
you love all the books, but picking one that you truly, truly adore, it's nice hearing that, Adrian. And I'm curious to know, was there a particular writing process that you had when developing the story itself or the plots for the series?
I think not necessarily one thing specifically on its own, but my life, I think at the time when I had these ideas, just like the light bulb kind of turning on. One was my kids, and you'll obviously be able to pick that up whenever you start listening to the stories, because when we play these games, it's interesting how we don't have a lot of focus on there's no kids, there's not a bathroom, these people don't require food, you know, just like the basic things of life. My kids were a huge inspiration with the direction that I chose to go, because before them, it was off of a couple of different other catalysts. Instead of following those routes, I think my children were the most important factor, and you'll see why, or you'll hear why. Hopefully, maybe one day you will see why. Other than the children, my work in healthcare, I had a lot of, there's been patients in the past that I've talked with that, it's like you get their stories and you kind of get this base of, you know, who they are. And it's just this short little window, because who are they? These patients that have been in front of me, and I'm seeing them on the worst day of their life. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't want to be in the hospital. Nobody wants to be in the hospital. And I'm here and I'm charged and tasked with taking care of them or their loved ones. Maybe their loved one is in there. Ventilator management, a lot of things. I do airway. I manage ventilators, life support. And there's things you can take away from your daily life if you're keeping your eyes open and they're right in front of you, that kind of give meaning to what's important in your life. If you didn't feel like you had anything important, then maybe you weren't looking deep enough. And mm-hmm. I think my time in healthcare has had a little bit of influence on how I chose to go with the stories, just because you get frustrated, I think, with medicine, because it's slow acting. And I'm not talking about medicine like drugs. I mean, just treatments, therapy, getting people mm-hmm. healthy again. It takes individuals a good length of time to get back to where they were before, if they can get back to where they were before, or at least a fraction of what they had. And the character and the involvement of magic and certain things in a different world allows individuals to step away from that. And mm-hmm. how would it be in this place? How would it be in this world? And if it wasn't people that just going to hospitals and clinics and getting medicine and band-aids and vaccinations, how would you live life in these other places? So that had a little bit of an influence. My children mm-hmm. had a little bit of an influence, a bit of an influence. And music. I started playing violin, the viola, roughly 2013, 2014, I think something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And it was inspired by my friend Taylor Davis. She's been a violinist since she was, I don't know, 6 years old. Same thing as Lindsay. Mm-hmm. And I could chat with her and talk about scenes, and I can listen to recommendations, and I can write a scene with a song as the backdrop. And that mm-hmm. was a huge fundamental component for these stories as well. So I think everything in general, my children, my work in healthcare, you know, and I can even tie in parts of it with my youth, as far as just not necessarily the violence of the Marines or the military, but that understanding. And there's a couple of scenes. I'm not going to say a lot of scenes, but in book two, mm-hmm. it's very focused around the empire in Cyrodiil. And when you have individuals who are in military service, they behave, they speak a certain way. And to convey that appropriately, I think I even drew from military history and just applied small amounts of that into the books. Mm-hmm. Not to where it was overpowering, but just to where it was believable. And it was, you know, that's essentially, I was there, I lived it, so I use it. Everything I think from my life, in some regard, you know, came together in certain parts of this books.
Mm-hmm. And are there any upcoming projects that maybe you could drop hints about, or maybe a new direction you plan to explore when it comes to your writing and storytelling?
Well, there's a couple of different facets. I can release the information. You know, it's not going to be any damaging by any means. It's mm-hmm. I was doing children's stories also, and it's about a hospital companion, a companion dog, companion animals. And mm-hmm. one of the visitation dogs that we had before, you know, it just, you'd see people light up in the hospital. And I took that as, wow, what's going on in this dog's mind? And this is their life. They go from patient to patient to patient. And these patients are, you know, they won't talk to anybody sometimes, or they're very minimal in their communication efforts. And then the animal comes in and they just pet the dog and they smile, or they talk. And it's because it's just what it is. It's amazing. So I started into children's stories with mm-hmm. A dog that I have named, and everything is it's on the It's on the march. We're trying. I'm moving forward with it. I'm just very busy with hospital work, so it's gotten me kind of spread all over the state. So I haven't had a lot of time like I wish I did to commit to like I had with Genetics Chronicles. Now, as far as other work, I still am carrying around my collegiate notepad, just like I did with the first three books. And I'm doing that because there are supposed to be more books of the Genetic Chronicle line, but not focused just on her. And it's that's all I can say is there are supposed to be two more books, but they're on development and we'll see how it turns out.
You know, you mentioned the books and I just look over and I see next to me a pile of what I call my books of thoughts, not just one, but a variety of books of thoughts, because I have several notebooks and I carry in random. I just carry whichever I pick up out first. I just carry it with me whenever I'm going, because I normally have random ideas and I have to note it down because I will forget. Trust me, I will forget. The moment the idea is out of my head, it's gone forever. And then I look to my right, I see papers stuck to my wall because I have a series I'm currently writing and I needed to visualize it. And from the PC, you can't really see anything. It's different. It's different when it's on paper. I know readers won't understand it, or any other person who is not an author, but every single person that I meet who's an author, we always seem like crazy little creatives because we either write on walls, write on desks, have notebooks that do not make sense, or we have papers stuck to the wall with random things written on it.
Yeah, it looks like a crime scene and you're tying post-its together.
Exactly.
I know.
My mom was telling me, why do you have a whodunit mystery paper stuck on the wall? And it doesn't make sense. It's like a murder board, but isn't. It's just stuck there.
It makes so sense to you. And the pen is in your hand.
Yeah, because without that, I cannot write. I get stuck. I need to see it. I need to see where I'm at. I need to understand what I was doing so that I don't stray. Let me just say that. I don't stray away from the story.
Sure. That makes perfect sense.
You can delete a document and then it's gone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, just that. But a paper.
It's a paper. Reference forever.
Yeah, or a wall with Sharpie marks everywhere. Or your desk, that's an absolute mess. These are things that just stick automatically.
Yeah, that's brilliant to hear. I love that because it's perfect. It's a perfect description of where our mind is, because the same thing is asked. Well, what do you do for writing? How do you write? And I say, you know what? I do it on paper. And then if you have a scene or something that you have to leave, get a little sticky note and put it on that page, like a bookmark, and title on there what that area is referencing. Like it's a dinner scene or it's a fight scene between so-and-so, just so you could go back. Yeah. Just like you said. And I always, oh man, I guess somebody was asking anything you could take away with, I'm trying to write a small series and what would you recommend? I said, do what you're doing. I said, the best thing I can say to anybody is read it out loud. Once you've written it, read it out loud to yourself, because you'll find yourself going through with a pencil because it doesn't sound as good as it did in your head when the words are coming out of your mouth. So you have to re-edit it, or, you know, you have to just change the word structure or use a different word, something that makes it just flow better. That's what I did for all of mine. I don't know. I just had alphabet soup coming out of my eyes because I had read my books so many times and then read them out loud. And still to this day, I can listen to them. I can listen to the stories. I think that helped more than anything definitely. Not more than anything, but it's a component that you can't exclude from writing books. Read them out loud because you might find yourself changing them.
And sometimes the problem with reading it out loud, you end up hating some chapters, then you think you're not good at writing, then you end up in a crying fit, and then you just delete everything, and then you sit back and realize, oh wait, it actually could work, so I'm gonna keep it. Because when you're writing and reading it out loud, it's like you're talking to yourself basically, because whatever you wrote was in your head. So these are your inner deeper thoughts that you're reading out loud, and you're just hoping that people out there will understand whatever you are trying to put on paper, because sometimes the draft never makes sense, guys. I don't know. Drafts should be appreciated more, you know? It
Sure.
takes a lot. It takes a lot not to just set the whole draft ablaze, because I've been there. I just look at it and I'm like, nah, nah, this could not work. And I know that, I don't know if you have people like this in your life, but like referrals that you can send a few chapters to, like friends, close friends, who won't leak whatever you've written, and then they can
Yeah.
just read through it and then tell you, oh, this is actually good. And then when I send it out like that, and then the feedback comes back, oh, it's good, it's good, it's good, I never trust it. I'm like, nah, I don't want it. You said it's good. You're saying that because you're my friend. So
Yeah, it
I
does
don't think it's good.
suspicion. Yeah. I definitely can say I can attest to that my books are I they would be twice the thickness if I wouldn't have edited as much as I did. And I didn't cut content to the point where it changes the story. It just it the flow. And that was it. I think that was it. Whenever I heard myself saying something out loud and I have a page that I had written and I'm reading it out loud, I realize, wow, some of these are really run-on sentences. They sounded okay in my head, but this coming out of my mouth, it sounds redundant. So I that one page would turn into a half page or, a three-quarter page. But consistently I have that just all these collegiate books that notebooks that just got lines through, lines through, lines through a lot of the story. Yeah, I 100% agree with that as far as trying to lean on some individuals. I had some professional editors and folks that were just kind of go-to that were even with the company. Josh, good friend with ZeniMax, he's like, man, yeah, you have creative control. He says that's a rare thing whenever we have so many team-based projects. And I said, well, I still got to hear it from somebody than just myself. You know? So yeah, I think that is just invaluable to have people who won't just give you a, yeah, it's great. And it's like, yeah, you don't owe me anything, buddy. Tell me the truth. Yeah.
Yeah, I won't hold it against you. Just tell me, is it good or does it stink? Just tell me.
What would you change? Yeah, if this was your story, what would you change? And it's kind of that blessing in disguise. It's a flip side coin because, or excuse me, a double sided coin because you want to trust them with the perception that they are getting, and if they would change anything. At the same time, you go into it sometimes not wanting to really change much. You have the story, you know where you're trying to go. If you change certain little things, it might be catastrophic. It's I don't not necessarily that bad on the overall scenario, but it does make me a little nervous sometimes to ask too much. Because then I've had that same thing happen where oh, I wish I see more of this, I wish I see more of that, I want to see more of this, and all of a sudden I'm trying not to stray too far away from what the scene was originally in my mind.
Yeah, and as we bring this episode to a close, Adrian, sadly, sadly, it's before we end up talking for 5 hours here. What can be a something? Okay, let me just say this. What can be something you want to tell our readers or gamers about this book? Why should they go get this book?
If they have found themselves in a lull with any kind of motivation or passion or drive to play the game, this is a way to rekindle what's truly out there.
Mm-hmm.
The heroes that you personify yourself as in a game, or the super strong characters of this or that, with any number of stories, I always try to convey that every person that you pass in the game, in mm-hmm. real life, doesn't matter where, every person has a story, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you listen to this, it's going to put you into a story where you want to go revisit those worlds. You want to level up your characters. You want to just kind of experience more of what you're being brought along the ride for with this trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would say.
Yeah, and you've heard that. Run. Don't even walk. Go to Audible right now. And for those, before I even finish, for those who normally say that, oh, reading an audiobook doesn't count as reading, who told you? You know, it's basically when you're reading a book by yourself, you're your own personal Audible because you're playing the sounds in your own head. But with Audible, when you listen to book in Audible, it's a whole new experience. If you haven't tried it, it's a whole new experience because you just get to kick back and listen and you get to visualize it. And I'm sure that with this series, you'll actually get to visualize that as well, especially for those gamers out there who know the map, who know the characters, who know the lore. It will be easier for you to navigate through the book. It will be easier for you to picture the characters, picture the lands. But even for the non-gamers, every fantasy book out there is going to be easy for you to picture it out if you're using Audible. And no, this is not an Audible advertisement, guys. Never been sponsored by Audible, lol. But thank you so much, Adrian, for being part of the show and this episode, too.
My pleasure and great honor. Thank you for having me on.
The honor is all mine, Adrian. The honor is all mine. And I'm sure maybe, who knows, in the coming months, in the coming year, you'll be back on the podcast and maybe you'll have even more surprises then. Maybe we'll have a new surprise from the Elder Scrolls. I normally confuse both of them, Elder Rings and Elder Scrolls.
There's so many out there that have very close titles.
Oh,
but
so
yes,
many.
I agree. I would love, cherish the option to come back, yeah.
Yeah, and guys, go grab the books on Audible. Like I said, link will be in the description down below. Did you know that all three books are shorter than The Two Towers? It's 11, 12 hours if you listen to all three books all at once, if you just binge them. It's shorter than The Lord of the Rings. It's shorter than A Court of Thorns and Roses. It's even shorter than The Fourth Wing. The Fourth Wing is 26 hours long, if I remember that correctly. So you can manage to read all three books and be part of that little crew online who has read the book before it's even officially released, right? Because I'm going to be doing that next week as well. And remember to check out our social media pages and also Adrian's. Drop him a message. Drop him a question on social media. You know, just reach him out. Tell him what you like about the book. Ask him questions. Of course, he can't give you any, what do we call them, Adrian?
Just unreleased material, sensitive material. Yeah, yeah, it's undisclosed.
Yeah, my brain just popped up. I forgot the name. Spoilers, that's the word.
For the movies, spoilers. Oh, yeah, same thing. Yeah.
Yeah, we can just classify that as the same thing. And we'll see you guys next time here on Care Life Podcast with me, Fizz McKenzie. And until then, stay safe, stay creative, and have a lovely May. Bye.